available on digital media, iTunes podcast, smartphone apps, and from the online website. This is Outlook, the talking newspaper for Coventry.
Hello and welcome to Outlook from me, Nigel Hewin. This edition is being recorded on Wednesday, the 20th of August, 2025. And coming up in this programme, Elaine visits Martin near Southam. You remember we started the story of the Women's Orchestra at Auschwitz. Well, Margaret finishes that story this week. And we start a new one with Bill about a girl who spent 2 years on the street before she found secure accommodation. And there was a little curious happening in Suffolk, which Elaine is going to tell us about. And finally, visit to Scotland is finished by David and Graham, and they're still in Edinburgh. Next week, I'm sure they'll be somewhere else, though. But finally, before we end this programme entirely, I'll be telling you the answer to that little conundrum last week. Oh, I hope it's an answer, you'll understand it. Anyway, there is an answer for you. But there was also news from the Hub, your sport and post bag. But as always, we're going to start with the local news with your readers this week, Peter and Jeremy.
Outlook News.
A Coventry councillor says he is disappointed after a spate of burglaries in his ward, but has disagreed with fellow councillors that the council should start keeping street lights on through the night. The comments from Councillor Abdul Jobbar come after a spate of crime in a city ward, which saw 3 burglaries in 1 week in the same neighbourhood. The cases, in a cluster of streets known locally as the Trees, were shared by local officers as part of the Westwood Neighbourhood Police Team's weekly roundup, with incidents on Lime Tree, Beech Tree and Elm Tree avenues. Now, the hours in which streetlights are used was reduced dramatically by Coventry City Council last year in a scheme known as Part Night Street Lighting. Councillor Jobbar sent his sympathies to victims of these crimes, but said that reducing lighting times does not automatically lead to more crime. He said, "I'm incredibly disappointed to hear about these incidents, and my heart goes out to the residents affected. I would encourage any residents who may have seen anything to contact police immediately to share that information." Part night street lighting was introduced last year following public consultation on our budget proposals. We understand that there may be some concerns about perceived safety, but we monitor crime levels and meet with police on a monthly basis, and we have not seen an increase in crime on streets with part night lighting. Of course, we will continue to monitor these statistics and make changes should we need to. But Grace Lewis, another councillor for the ward, said switching off Coventry's street lights might have saved the council a few pounds, but it's come at the cost of public safety and peace of mind, disproportionately affecting women, night shift workers and young people. Fear is real and valid, regardless of whether it's reflected in crime statistics. Public safety should never have been treated as a budget cut. While I welcome the council's pledge to restore lighting, it must happen urgently. Not later this year, not in 2027, but now. No one should feel unsafe in their own community. Marcus Lapser, Reform Councillor for Westwood, agreed. It's very concerning that there have been 3 burglaries in the Trees area. The fact that the streetlights had turned off during the night is still a major concern for local people. While I don't yet know the times of these burglaries, the perception is that turning off the streetlights does not help with people's safety in the area.
Residents in Coventry are calling for traffic calming measures amid ongoing concerns about the danger posed by excessive speeding, which continues to put lives at risk. An online petition launched on Coventry City Council's online portal last week is requesting action be taken on Hollyfast Lane, Pikers Lane and Wall Hill Road. The petition, which currently has just under 100 signatures, is calling for a 30 miles per hour speed limit and speed bumps, saying the current conditions are simply not safe. It comes a few weeks after a horse and its rider were hit and injured by a car on Wall Hill Road. The petition states, "We, the undersigned, petition the council to implement effective traffic calming measures along Hollyfast Lane, Pikers Lane and the entirety of Wall Hill Road. Local residents have raised ongoing concerns about the danger posed by excessive speeding in these areas, which continues to put lives at risk. A reduction of the speed limit to 30 miles an hour along Wall Hill Road and all adjoining lanes, and the introduction of appropriate traffic calming measures such as speed humps, chicanes or other road safety interventions will help reduce vehicle speeds and prevent further avoidable incidents. These roads serve both residential and rural communities, and the current conditions are simply not safe. We must act now to prioritise the safety of all road users before further harm is caused. We will continue to work with colleagues and relevant agencies to ensure this issue is given the attention and action it deserves."
And now two quick follow-ups from last week's news. People evacuated from a tower block in Coventry due to severe flooding have started to return to their homes after the building was declared safe. Residents were forced to leave their flats in Mercia House after a fault in the sprinkler system caused flooding, but Citizen Housing, which manages the 17-storey building, has confirmed that the source of the leak has been fixed and that fire officers declared the site safe last Tuesday. The company said people would be returned back to their homes in phases over the coming days. And a councillor has said that the number of items on a disposal list drawn up by Culture Coventry Trust should be retained because of their links to the city. Photographic plates, crockery, bottles and a matchstick model were among the things highlighted as important to the heritage of the city by Roger Bailey. "We reported last week that nearly 600 pieces have been earmarked for disposal, including vintage camera equipment and old tools from various shops around the city." Marguerite Nugent from CCT, which manages the city's art collections and archives, said this type of clear out was normal. She explained that a review of the collection had not really been done before. However, Mr. Bailey said he wanted to protect anything with the word Coventry on it. "There are reasons why you don't think they're relevant, and I get that, but there are a number of plates with the coat of arms on, and I think these sort of things are important." Mr. Bailey said it was a shame that the items would not be used to create a series of historical Coventry scenes. "If it has the word Coventry on, even if it's not in good condition, I have a real problem with it going," he said. "These are hard enough pieces to find, especially the bottles and plates."
Safety teams are being introduced across the West Midlands rail network, including at Coventry Railway Station. Network Rail says they will be resolving issues that are likely to delay passengers' journeys. Teams are being used at 30 sites between Wolverhampton and Coventry, Lichfield and Bromsgrove, and Solihull and Langley Green. It is hoped they will prevent delays and help people feel more supported. Warm weather often increases incidents such as trespass, and the patrols are part of an initiative to keep trains moving. Patrollers will be conducting safety checks and checking platforms for suspected trespassers, vandals or vulnerable people. Nicholas Bond from Network Rail said, "Keeping people safe when in stations and on trains is our priority, and these patrollers help to do just that and keep trains running on time. We do lots of work to educate people about railway safety and offer help and support to those who might need it through the Samaritans. Additional patrols complement this, all of which ultimately helps to keep trains moving on time and people to get where they want to go. If anyone has any concerns, always report them to a member of staff or to British Transport Police on 61016. Patroller Lucas Howarth said, "It is essential to us all to stop trespass antisocial behaviour and vandalism at stations. I have integrated very well with the station teams, and it feels like we are one big family, working towards the same goals. Johnny Wiseman from West Midlands Railway said, "Safety is our number one priority. We look forward to working closely with the new station safety teams to support this work and keep our network running smoothly."
After last week's story of the closure of Agar's, we now have the news that a kitchen showroom in Coventry is closing its doors after 25 years, marking the end of an era. Kensington Studio on Kensington Road in Earlsdon closed last Saturday. The studio specialised in kitchen design and installations, bathroom designs, bedrooms and media walls through designing, supplying and installing. The studio also integrated sound and lights, such as Zuma Lumasonic speakers and luminaire light fittings. Kensington Studio owner Neil Gilbert says that the business will still be able to supply, design and install kitchens, bathrooms, bedrooms, media walls and home study areas, just not from their current Earlsdon base. He said, "Well, that's a wrap on our quarter of a century based on Kensington Road in Earlsdon. Fabulous customers, neighbours, friends and suppliers have helped make these 25 years seem like a breeze. And it feels like only a year or two ago that I was fitting out the studio at the turn of the millennium. Thank you all for making this a great journey, but it's not over. We'll still be able to design, supply and install as previously, just not from our Earlsdon base, utilising the same awesome products, the same attention to design detail and the same quality team who've worked alongside Kensington Studio for so many years." Customers took to Facebook to celebrate Neil's 25-year achievement. Carl Walker said, "25 years of the best kitchens and bathrooms in the Midlands. Congrats on the milestone, and I look forward to seeing the future kitchens, bathrooms and bedrooms with your new work style."
Holbrook's Library in Coventry will soon be closing for good. It is relocating from Holbrook Lane to Everdon Road. Coventry City Council confirmed that Holbrook's Library will be closing on Holbrook Lane on August the 28th. Holbrook's Library will be reopening on Everdon Road on September the 1st, but only from 8:30 in the morning to 3:45 in the afternoon. It will remain closed on Saturdays and Sundays. Residents are advised that Jubilee Crescent Library in Radford is just 5 minutes away from Holbrook's Library, although it will be closed from September the 1st to September the 13th. A spokesman for Coventry City Council said, "Holbrook's Library will be relocating to the Dementia Partnership Hub on Everdon Road, meaning it will now be a dementia-friendly library with improved access and facilities for all. It will reopen with new weekday opening hours of 8:30 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. While the move takes place, all other Coventry libraries will remain open as usual, with Jubilee Crescent Library being the nearest alternative. Customers can also continue to enjoy our full range of online resources.
The following short news story was a must this week, not because of the content, but because of the delicious online headline. "Dangerous donuts at former supermarket in Coventry mean police increase patrols." Police have increased patrols at the site of a former supermarket amid ongoing reports of cars being driven dangerously, because these donuts mean a car manoeuvre rotating the rear or front of the vehicle around the opposite set of wheels in a continuous motion, creating, ideally, a circular skid mark pattern of rubber on a carriageway and possibly even causing the tyres to emit smoke from friction. It's Sainsbury's on Austin Drive in Courthouse Green, which has been closed for over 2 years. While what it will eventually be used for is being decided, and despite several plans being submitted to repurpose the site, it has gradually become a magnet for antisocial behaviour, including donuts. Police in the area have revealed that they're aware of the issue and have increased patrols in a bid to deter drivers using the spot for dangerous driving manoeuvres. As well as trying to be more visible as a deterrent, officers are trying to figure out who the individuals involved are and are working with owners of the site to make it secure.
6. Brand new sports and activity spaces could be created in Coventry. Plans have been submitted for play zones, which could be introduced in deprived city neighbourhoods including Foshill, Hillfields and Willenhall. Coventry City Council will lead the project, which is being funded by the Premier League, the FA and Sport England. Play zones could be created at Edgewick Park, Jardine Crescent, Longford Park, Moat House, Virginia Road and Willenhall Brookstray. Existing multi-use games areas, or MUGAs, in the city will be transformed into play zones. Others could be introduced as high-quality spaces designed for a variety of sports. As part of the proposed project, the 6 city areas will have their existing surfaces upgraded. A spectator area with seating, an equipment storage facility and LED floodlighting. Play zones would also have safety features including a coded access gate and upgraded fencing. Both Edgewick Park and Jardine Crescent would have a 2G all-weather surface and sports markings. Longford Park and Moat House would have a 3G synthetic pitch and football markings. Willenhall Brookstray would have a new 2G synthetic surface and Virginia Road a tarmac all-weather surface with sports markings installed. Sites will also have a smart access booking system, and if the plans are given the go-ahead, 80 hours per week will be dedicated to community activities or free use for people living in each neighbourhood. Coventry City Council said the project focuses on 4 key groups, including ethnically diverse communities, disabled people and girls. Residents can have their say on the play zone plans at drop-in sessions in August. A spokesman for Coventry City Council said, "In partnership with the Football Foundation, we are looking to develop play zones to enhance outdoor activity spaces. Our goal is to help more people get active, stay healthy and enjoy access to inviting spaces to play. We are keen to hear your views on our plans for the potential play zones."
University Hospitals Coventry and Warwickshire NHS Trust has bucked a trend by retaining its overall rating of good. The Care Quality Commission CQC rating followed a routine inspection last November and December. 2 sites fall under the Trust's umbrella, the 110-bed Hospital of St Cross in Rugby, which has no A&E department, and Coventry's Acute University Hospital, which has something like 10 times that number of beds. The CQC used a new system to come by the overall rating, representing the overarching formal assessment at Trust level. Then the overall rating for each hospital remains good. Some individual aspects of the Trust provision also kept their good rating, while others dropped from good to requires improvement, with emergency care coming in for some criticism. Nonetheless, Professor Andy Hardy, CEO of the Trust, which runs the 2 sites, said he was incredibly proud of the achievement. "This report is against the backdrop of an increasingly pressured NHS, and we know that many CQC reports and ratings recently have seen hospitals falling, given the pressure the NHS is facing. So we've bucked that trend, and I'm very proud. We don't always get things right, and we look to learn from that. And that's what these reports are good for, because they do highlight some things that we can get even better at. As for specific provision, a variety of services were examined. Medical care, children and young people, surgery and urgent and emergency care services were reviewed at university, with surgery assessed at St Cross. Rugby's surgery services retained their good rating, as did Coventry's medical care and surgery. But Coventry's children and young people's care and urgent and emergency care were downgraded from good to requires improvement. The report found that demand on the emergency services at university was so high at times that, despite their best efforts, staff were not always able to provide satisfactory care. Professor Hardy said he did not think that a second AE in the region, A&E in the region, would help relieve the demand. Across the whole country, we're seeing increasingly demands on the front door of hospitals, he said. We're working as a system with our colleagues in primary care, community care, etc., so people don't just go to hospital. Inspectors also found that services for children and young people required improvement in Coventry, saying that the services simply did not have sufficient numbers of suitably qualified and experienced nursing staff to run all shifts with safe levels of staffing.
The site of Coventry's Olympic-sized swimming pool that has been shut for 5 years is facing demolition. The Coventry Sports and Leisure Centre has been empty since it closed in 2020, costing the council around £400,000 a year to mothball and secure. 5 years of marketing efforts have failed to attract a buyer for the Grade 2 listed Fairfax Street site, known locally since it opened in the 1960s as Cov Baths. Now, Coventry City Council has confirmed it will apply for permission to demolish the part of the building housing the 50-metre pool, while the extension, known as the Elephant because of its shape, will be unaffected. The council's decision comes after a petition was launched in July calling for the Elephant to reopen as a leisure centre that was signed by more than 700 people. We need to make a decision really about what we can do with the pool, Councillor Jim O'Boyle said. If nobody wants to use it, if nobody wants to own it, if it's no longer fit for purpose, then I think the time has come for us to make that decision about maybe bringing it down. He said he expected an application for demolition to be submitted in the next few months. Despite the building being Grade 2 listed, Councillor O'Boyle insists the council has worked with Historic England and explored every single avenue of use. The council granted an exclusivity agreement to Ranier Developments to attract a developer after 2020's closure. In 2023, the firm told the BBC it had a buyer lined up and hoped to begin work in 2024, but the council said the deal fell through because of the costs involved in converting the listed building.
And finally, a story that Elaine would have despaired over, and you may want to imagine that she is reading this. The future of the water play area in the War Memorial Park remains uncertain more than a year on due to significant damage. The splash and play area was installed in 2004, and children could enjoy 36 water jets, as well as water features including the water ring, the mushroom, the poppets, and the drencher. But it closed over a year ago due to a fault in the pump room. Coventry City Council have previously said it will reopen in time for the summer holiday period, but now the council says that the splash park remains closed and that it is exploring options for its future. A spokesperson for the council said, "The water play area at the War Memorial Park remains closed after there was a flood in the pump room which caused significant damage to the main area that powers the feature. The council is exploring different options for the future of the attraction and no decision has currently been taken. In the meantime, there's still a lot of fun for families to enjoy at our wonderful park." It's not just Coventry though that lacks a water play area. A brand new splash park in Leamington Spa, which had been open only for 2 weeks following refurbishment, has been closed by the local council, albeit with great sadness. The paddling pool at Victoria Park in Leamington Town Centre has been shut for a range of technical issues, Warwick District Council said. Well, these closures mean that families in Coventry and Warwickshire have been left with no public water play areas for children, since a new development in Warwick's St Nicholas Park is yet to open.
Outlook News.
And that completes the local news from this week from Jeremy and Peter. Now, just before we move on, I've got the usual bits of announcements. One, of course, is sunrise and sunset. Sunrise at the moment is 5:55 in the morning, and it disappears at 8:15 in the evening. And now we've had the gap from the bands in the park, and they're resuming on Sunday week, the 31st of August, and that will be at Knowlesmill Park. And the music there is described as non-stop bop. And just to let you know, the following week, there's three this year, 31st of August, 7th of September and 14th. 31st, I've told you, the 7th is at Spencer Park, and the 14th will be Culloden Castle Park. And we will tell you more about those as the weeks go on. And finally, I came across something in the book which is called What's On, which might appeal, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, Abridged. A fast-firing production covering 37 Shakespeare plays in under 2 hours, Monday the 25th to Saturday the 30th of August at the Tattersmith Theatre in Kenilworth. So, there you are, a little bit of entertainment if someone's into Shakespeare. You've just been away, haven't you?
I have, I've been away for...
You're sorry to be back, I think.
Well, no, I'm glad to be back. I had a very lovely 2 weeks, but excellent. Of course, you know, I'm back in the cradle with the people that I love. So, no, it's fine. No, it's very good. Very hot weather, yep. Thank you. And it's not quite so hot today. But last Thursday, under a week ago, I was enjoying 38 degree heat.
Really?
On a bit
too much, wasn't it?
Well, when
you can
cope
with that, can you?
Swimming in the river.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
You know, and those sorts of things.
The river's steaming slowly, I guess.
No, it was very nice. The River Saône in France is beautiful. And, we had a week on a boat there. And then before that, we were in a little chateau that belongs to some friends of mine. Excellent. And then a few days in Paris before that. So it was very nice.
All good stuff.
Yes,
all
felt like stuff. A good long
time. You chose the right fortnight, because I see on the weather up today it's wet in France.
Ah yes, well, exactly. It was a very, very good choice. Yeah, no, it's, but I'm happy to be back.
Good.
You know, yeah,
let's get parochial and talk about the hub.
Let's get very parochial. Okay, we have a little bit of news about universal credit. Now, if you are of working age and you are on a legacy benefit like employment support allowance or something else, and they say we need to move you on to universal credit, and this is gradually happening for everybody. The Citizens Advice Bureau, CAB, they have set up a dedicated helpline, and it's called CAB Help to Claim. That number, if you are interested in it now, is 0800 144 8444. I'll give you that again, 0800 144 8444. It's a very good service. So the CAB team will, when you call, they'll ask you about your background, what kind of current benefits and circumstances you are, and then sort of give you an idea of what your expected award under the Universal Credit would be, and if it looks like it might be a bit less. Moving into the new benefit, they'll give advice on how to sort it out so there's no loss of money. So it's a really good service. And also, they will hold your hand when actually talking to the DWP. They'll do a three-way conference call with them. But also we can help as well with that. So if you're even nervous about talking to the to CAB and their helpline, then we'll help you with that. It's, you know, if you know that you're going to have to move on to universal credit, make a new claim for universal credit, then just remember this. Come and talk to us about it. Give us a call on 024-7671-7522, and either talk to Karen, would be the best person, or to me about it, and then we can help you get the right support that you need. I imagine it's quite a complicated and confusing process. So all the help that you can get it would be good, and there is help available. And Karen used this with used this service with somebody the other day and said it was excellent. So so well done the CAB for coming up with a very useful service, and we will help you access that if you need to. Now we have a going to have a new group, a new exercise class starting here at the Hub. And this is an exercise and fitness class. Now, this isn't a gentle trot or bit of waving your arms around or anything like that. This is, I don't mean to disparage any of the other activities that we do, by the way, here, by that. But this is seriously intense exercise. Now, Chris and Claire and Zoe, they have a personal trainer in Sophie, who has been helping them to keep fit. And Sophie has offered to do a new exercise class here at the centre. And it's going to take place on Wednesdays at 11:45 a.m. and it'll be for an hour. Now, as I said, this is serious stuff. So there are some minimum entry requirements here. So you must be able to walk for 30 minutes. Yeah, so if you can like go out for a brisk walk, even if you need guiding or whatever, but if you can do that for 30 minutes, then that's step one. Well, probably about step 5,000, but there we are. But here's the bit. You also need to be able to get down to the floor and up again 3 times in 1 minute. Now, if you think you can do that and walk for 30 minutes, then you will be able to take part in this group. It's pretty high intensity. We've had requests for something a bit more intense, so here we are. We will need to if you want to sign up for that, then give Chris a call, I think, and let him know. He's our activities manager, volunteers and activities manager, as you know. So let him know. You can also give reception a call and let them know as well, and they'll pass the message on. Before you take part in that group, you'll need to complete what's called a PARQ form, which basically talks about your general health and everything. So, and we can help with that. It's just a document that licensed personal trainers need to do, so that they're not trying to do extensive exercise with somebody, you know, who might have a fatal heart condition, for example. Obviously, Sophie, being a practitioner of a personal trainer, she does cost a bit. So this new group will be set at the same level as for yoga, so it's going to be £8 a session. So it's not the usual £6 for the other groups. So £8 a session for 1 hour on Wednesday, 11:45. So there we are. That's there and available. Do please let us know. We have a feeling that there's going to be a number of people who might be quite interested in taking part.
Is this purely fitness, or is it a little bit of weight reduction as well, or not?
Certainly the fitness is there.
That's the main thing.
Yep. Yes, and okay. You know, maybe the weight reduction will come along afterwards. Who knows?
Good.
Right. We are, I think we've mentioned this before, but we're going to hold an open day on the 9th of October, which is also World Sight Day. And we've been sort of devising various things that we have going to take place there. We're getting towards finalising them anyway. We're hoping to have a demonstration of the Meta glasses that's linked to the Be My Eyes AI app. These are basically, the glasses that you put on, and using the app as well connected to your phone, they will basically talk to you and tell you what's going on around you and read things to you and all sorts of interesting things. Now, you may be aware of Orcam, and there's been other products in the past as well that cost a number of £1,000s, whereas these Meta glasses cost a few hundred. So so we're hoping that it might be quite a game changer for some people. One thing we can be pretty sure is Chris bought a 3D printer a few weeks ago, and he's been 3D printing quite a lot of things. It's apparently got a little issue at the moment, but is hoping to do a bit of 3D printing and doing a bit of a talk about that. This sounds a bit odd, you know, for a centre, for the Vision Hub, but he's been producing some like raised maps of the area, for example. So there's all sorts of different ways in which 3D printing could be useful for people with visual impairments. We're going to have an equipment display. We're thinking about having a little bit of a session on training about sight loss for carers or people very new to sight loss, but particularly for carers, because some people who support people with sight loss, you know, maybe don't know what's, you know, how to manage and how to deal with people. So we're gonna have a bit of that, which Karen will be delivering. We're thinking about perhaps doing a little quick session on learning how to fingerspell using deafblind manual, because that's very, I mean, it's really quick to pick up if you know what you're doing, and we can help you with that. We're looking to get somebody in to talk about safety if you're visually impaired, and we'll probably get the police in as well to have a chat about home safety. We're going to see if we can get British Blind Sport in. There's going to be Showdown available as well, and we'll have some representatives from groups doing stuff around the place as well. So hopefully it could be quite a quite a big and busy day, and we're going to invite people from who are both in visually impaired groups around the city and who may not use the centre very much, but also going to see if we can get people from care homes and various all other things. So what I would suggest is talk to people, anybody in your network, and get them to come along. You know, we want to promote the charity's new name, and we want to promote the, you know, very good work that we do here, and I think the more you can help us to do that, the better. And finally, I would like to remind you that it is Bank Holiday Monday on Monday the 25th, Monday the 25th. So the centre will be closed. So there will be no Monday Club, there will be no IT, and there will be no creative writing on Monday. And that, dear friends, is quite a lot. And
quite
that
a lot.
Is that.
Yes. That sounds like an interesting development of these glasses, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I know some people have...
And people will be able to try it, presumably.
Yes, hopefully. Yeah. Yes, yeah. That's what we're aiming to do.
Incredible.
I know a lot of people have had a go at them, and they think they're pretty amazing, and they're pitched at a price point that is really, really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
There's other organisations. There's another app that has tried to produce something similar, but it seems that the glasses technology has lifted it up into the several thousands of pounds.
Where is it coming from?
Well, Meta is
British company.
Meta is Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, right.
And all that.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Be My Eyes, you know, they've been an app that's been around for quite a long time. They've still do a bit, but they basically your phone will contact through the internet anybody in the world to read something for you.
Yeah.
over t'internet, you know, if you show something on your phone. But they've now developed AI, and AI is now very, very good at reading and interpreting the world around. So yeah, it should be a really interesting,
exciting times.
Yeah.
Mm. Good. Thanks, Hugh.
Thank you.
It's now time for sport, and Sarah's here and her report for this week.
Well, hello there, lovely, lovely listeners. And it's Sarah with sport, with a bit of crunching in the background from Camilla the cat, who's got a bowl of biscuits. Right, now on this week's agenda, we have football, quite a lot of it actually, as you'll see. Bit of tennis, more on the Women's Rugby World Cup, get a new pair of teeth for next week. And then we have a bit of athletics before finishing with sailing. Now, I'm recording this on the Monday, which will make sense when I refer to other days of the week. So I'm going to go back just about a week from when I'm recording to when Coventry played Luton Town in the EFL Cup, the League Cup, which was at one stage called the Carling Cup, the Milk Cup, but it is still currently called the Carabao Cup. Carabao are apparently being a make of energy drink. Now, City fielded 9 different players to the death by boredom match against Hull City at the previous weekend. But anything you can do, we can do better. Luton fielded 11 different players from their weekend match. The whole team, in other words. Well, I have to say, the first half was just like the whole match. Anyone got an alarm clock to wake me up? In fact, on the 56th minute, the two CWR commentators said, "Do you reckon this goal mouth has got some cling film over it that's repelling the ball?" No, it was really that boring. But then, on the 57th minute, one of our young players, Raphael, got hold of the ball, not literally, but dribbled the ball up the pitch. In fact, he really made the goal. Passed to Haji Wright, who passed to the much maligned Ellis Sims, who scored. City 1-0 up. And that is how it finished. The only downside of that is that in the second round, we've drawn Millwall. And not just drawn them, we've got them away at their ground, the Den. Knuckle dusters, a free knuckle duster with every ticket, I think, will be the order of the day for that one. Not that I am provoking rioting, please note, just a realist. So, on Saturday, we headed for our first away match of the season, away to Derby County at Pride Park. Now, we hadn't won at Pride Park for 22 years before the match. But gosh, what a difference a week makes, as you'll find out. After the boring match the previous Saturday, hold tight and you're going to hear the word but quite a lot in this report. On the 7th minute, City won a free kick. Superb kick from Victor Torp, straight to Bobby Thomas's head. And Bobby, one of our defenders, was just standing very close to the goal mouth, headed it in. City 1-0 up. However, on the 15th minute, they also got a free kick and scored. But then, shortly afterwards, one of our strikers was brought down in the goal mat near the goal mouth. Penalty, which Haji Wright, again our striker, converted. City 2-1 up. But then they got a penalty. 1 minute of extra time in the first half, which they converted. So that was how it finished at half time, 2-2. But unfortunately, and very sadly, they scored shortly into the second half. And so it remained until the 72nd minute, when young Brandon Thomas Asante, who last week I called Thomas Brandon Asante, oh well, you knew what I meant, scored. So that made us equal, 3 goals all. Could it last till the end? But shortly after, we'd hardly drawn our breath, then another of our young strikers, Ephraim Mason Clark, scored. Oh, can't keep up with this. City were 4-3 in the lead. And I have to say, that was from a superb kick in by Milan Van Avac, who I just hope we manage to keep hold of till the end of the transfer window. Could it last? Well, could it indeed. But in the 78th minute, another fantastic kick from Victor Torp, and City were 5-3 up. 5-3? Well, yes, that was how it finished. Who says good things can't come to an end? Well, certainly our bad record against Derby at Pride Park came to an end. Now, our next match is on Saturday the 23rd. It's a 3 p.m. kickoff, and it's at the CBS Coventry Building Society Arena against QPR, Queen's Park Rangers, which is a bit ironic, really, because this week, on Wednesday the 20th, City celebrate their 20 years of playing at the CBS. And who was our first match against? QPR. And the result was that we won. It was either 3-1 or 3-0, but I know we won. Just looking briefly at our non-league sides. Down in Tier 6, Leamington entertained South Shields, whilst in Tier 7, Stratford Town were away at Quorn. But I'm afraid that the results were the same for both of them, with two losses. However, it's congrats to Nuneaton Town, who 5 matches into their season have won 5 matches. So well done there, Nuneaton, and keep this up and promotion will beckon. We'll soon have you back up there from whence you came. Now, looking briefly at tennis, I told you last week that Emma Raducanu was into the 3rd round of the Cincinnati Open, where sadly she lost. But I must qualify that. She lost to the long-time world number one, Ayla Sabalenka, and she lost very narrowly. In fact, she was the only one that took an extra game. She lost 7-6, 4-6, 7-6. Much closer than the match where they played at Wimbledon. Now, the US Open will begin on Monday the 25th, although the sort of celebrity almost mixed doubles will have taken place before that, so I'll bring you up to speed on the tennis next week. So, Rugby Union, we finally have the Women's World Cup. Well, we will on Friday anyway. That is Friday the 22nd of August, and it runs until the 27th of September. Now, most importantly, all matches featuring England, Scotland, Wales or Ireland are on BBC Two, with any game also screened live, no matter who it features, on the iPlayer and on the website. There's also intermittent coverage, I gather, on Radio 5 Live. So what's your excuse? Now, I'm not going to give you all of the main England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales fixtures, but I will just give you the first ones. That is, England open the tournament by playing the USA on Friday. Now, the match begins at 7:30, though there's coverage from 6:30. Wales have a tasty encounter with Scotland the following day, that is Saturday the 23rd, at 2:45. Whilst Ireland have to wait a further day until Sunday the 24th, when they kick off at 12 p.m. against Japan. Just briefly looking at athletics, you may remember that at Christmas I told you how she'd won Sports Personality of the Year, and of course she won the Olympic gold medal at the 1500 metres, she being of course Keely Hodgkinson. Keely who? Forgotten her? Well, you might have actually, because she has not run for 370 days due to a hamstring injury. When I say not run, I mean not competed. I'm sure she's obviously been doing some training, particularly more latterly. Anyway, she didn't just win the 800 metres in the Poland Diamond League. She has set a new world lead for this year. So it's looking very good for our Keighley going into the World Athletics Championship, which takes place in Tokyo in September. And finally, now some rule changes have been announced for the America's Cup, which according to ALEXA is the oldest competitive sport going. First of all, one of the, I believe it used to be five, could be six person crew, has to be a woman. Bit tokenistic, okay, but if it gets some female representation, I'll go with it. But then there has to be another person, a sort of guest on board, who is a celebrity. The mind boggles. So I sat here thinking, well, what are they going to do on the boat? Sit and read the paper? Nope, I've got it. Do you remember the days when the old schooner ships used to have sort of metal pole poking out the front and they'd tie something onto it as their masthead, their figurehead? Yep, well, I can just see those celebs now lashed to the pole at the front of the boat. Or am I just being very wicked and very naughty? Anyway, if I am, before I get myself into more hot water, I will say have a great week ahead, and I am glad it's gone a bit cooler. Bye!
I know I'm waiting for a new hearing aid to replace the one I lost a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sure Sarah said that the City scored five goals. Surely not. That would be stupid. Now let's find out what Dave's found in his postbag this week.
This is Postbag. Join in the discussion.
Hello and welcome to your postbag. I'd like to say a big get well soon again to John. He really is a stalwart. He's very dedicated to helping Julia to provide information and entertainment for Postbag for you. Let's see what you can do in Postbag. Here's Julia with the latest report about popular events throughout the summer as advertised on Outlook. The council provides you with a folding chair from a lorry. All you have to do is sit and relax and enjoy the music between 2 and 4pm. Julia's report is entitled Bands in the Park. Longford Park, that is, the biggest park in Coventry. I went with my friend Rachel. Day Spring Steel Band were top of the bill. We took our own chairs. They played all the West Indian favourites, starting with Hot Hot Hot, then a Boney M medley. Then we took a Bridge Over Troubled Waters. I don't know why they were troubled. It was the River Sow, and we didn't have my friend John with us, so they had no cause to be troubled. I've been making poppies for £1.50. You can have double reds, single reds, or glittery ones. You can choose. All the money goes to British Legion and Coventry Vision Hub. So you can see Julia in the Monday Club to order some, or order via the lovely David Monks. None of the money will go to my friend John because he's too greedy. Please buy one of my poppies. Love, Julia. Thank you, Julia. Please support Julia's tremendous efforts to raise money for Coventry Vision Hub and the Royal British Legion. Tell Julia directly or let me know via postbag. Now, if you want to see some real flowers in bloom and buy some plants, Edwina tells you about Russell's Garden Centre and Mr. Russell, who founded it.
Mr. Russell? The first Mr. Russell bought that beautiful area and built up the garden centre and this walking area over the years. He started and opened the first garden centre in 1927. That shows how wonderful it has taken years to build to what it is now. I hope you perhaps visit Russell's. It is a very lovely garden centre with very good plants indeed. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Edwina. As we mentioned last week, a lovely time to visit the Quarry Garden, which is in the top of the car park, is in May when the azaleas are out. The pink and white gladioli in my garden from bulbs that I bought from Thriplow Daffodil Day are blooming, along with some sunflowers, begonia and roses from a plant we're given for our Ruby wedding anniversary. And yes, and the begonia, they seem to be keep coming throughout the summer. That's really, really nice. The Coventry Vision Hub allotment group, who once did a lovely makeover of our garden, they make sure the visitors are greeted at Coventry Vision Hub by lovely flowers, and also in the lovely garden as well. Now, here's Doreen to tell you about the name change to Coventry Vision Hub and the need to keep Postbag going.
Hello everybody, Doreen Hilton here again. Haven't spoke for a while, but I think she's back on the mend again now. And we have these silly injections, cortisone, for our bones as we get older. Other things come in. I wasn't feeling very well, but anyway, we'll forget about that. And I've got a little message for you all. It was very, very nice to hear Edwina speaking about the resource centre of changing the names. Coventry Vision Hub. I think that is lovely that it has been changed, because resource centre has been known for a good many, many years, and it is nice that it has been, you know, seen to and being changed. And also, I think the broadcasting as well, with the lovely new wallets which they are bringing out, and also the labels, I've noticed how that's been put out, and also the memory sticks, which you have a little tag on the end with the Coventry Vision Hub on it as well. So I think it was really, really important what has been done, because most of those memory sticks have got lost in the post. There is some nasty people sometimes around, and it shouldn't be done really, because when you're on the post, work for the post, you should be trusted and be honest. But obviously, the way things are, you know, it just goes like that. But I say, for the resource centre, from the CBS, from the time I've been on myself, I've been on when it was at Jubilee Crescent, Ratford, when it was on the tapes, and also I went there to visit when it was doing the tapes recording, and it is marvellous how things have moved on. And that, I believe that was in the 70s when I went there, and moved up to Earlston, and I think it's lovely how, you know, the resource centre and the staff and the volunteers, they work very hard. Plus our Dave, he's been on the post bag for a while, because I remembered Bob Fine or Dave, which he came from Jubilee Crescent. The both of them do work really hard on the post bag. And it would be lovely if a few more, you know, stories came in for Dave to read out on the post bag. Not being nosy, to be friendly, to be nice and kind to one another. And also, I believe that, I feel that postbag is very important to us all us listeners who specially get it, because it's our continuous in with one another, speaking to one another, and sort of a knowing one another sometimes. But I'll always say the centre is a beautiful place to go. And I do say a very, very big thank you to all the staff and all the volunteers. They work very hard and they deserve what they can have. So this is Doreen Hilton signing off. Take care, everybody. Speak to you all soon again. Bye.
Thank you, Doreen, for your phone call. It was lovely to hear from you and to chat with you. You can phone me up for chat and a message for postbag if you wish. I'm on 024-7659-8484. The sound quality from the phone extension at the side of Sheila's chair is really good. That's why Doreen sounds so clear. And of course you can ring us up and leave a message by ringing Coventry Vision Hub on 024-7671-7522 and press 5 for Coventry Talking Newspaper and start speaking. If you make a mistake, we can correct it. No problem. And the main thing is, let's hear from you and get to know each other. The world needs to communicate more and it can start with us. Thank you for your messages this week. Please, let's hear from you next week. I'm sure you've got lots to talk about, the way you've been on holiday, if you're enjoying the sunshine. You can send us an email if you want to that email address they give out after postbag, or mine. It's davidmonks46@gmail.com, if you like. Okay, but also you can send a letter, either written by you or someone on your behalf. And that's loads of ways you can talk to us. Okay, thank you very much, and bye for now.
This is Outlook. You can contact Postbag.
Our website is www.talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Our email address is postbag@talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Join in the discussion on Postbag.
And so that's your postbag from Dave. Do please send in a message. Dave and all your fellow listeners would love to hear from you, whether it's a comment about the programme, a report on your holiday, a tip about making life easier, or anything else you'd like to tell us about. Do pick up the phone, it's ever so easy. Now, from Mansetta last week, Elaine goes southeast of Coventry to Marton near Southam.
Marton stands at the confluence of the rivers Leam and Itchen and is dissected by the A423 Coventry to Oxford Road. An interesting feature here is the Middleton Bridge over the River Leam, named after John Middleton, who was born in the village but became a wealthy mercer in the City of London at the time of Sir Richard, known as Dick, Whittington. It was built in 1414. Possibly to celebrate his retirement as warden of the ancient Mercer's Company, and by his intervention the villagers were released from the payment of toll. It is unusual in that it follows the curve of the road, and although widened and improved to accommodate modern traffic, some of the original stone arches can still be seen. The bridge has become inadequate for the modern lorries, and a rebuilding scheme will straighten much of the bend. It will also expose more of the ancient bridge, which will become a footbridge. Within the village, a private road to Hockley House Farm crosses the River Itchen via a bridge built by Samuel Shepherd around 1850. The parish church is dedicated to the Holy Spirit, itself uncommon, but unique here in that French form Saint-Esprit is used. This arises from the granting of the church in the 12th century by King Stephen as a chapel of ease to a French order of nuns, and was late originated in France but later installed in Nuneaton. When nearby land was excavated for building some years ago, several ancient bones were exhumed, which experts at Warwick County Museum thought were those of some of the nuns. the dating and location coinciding with the time during which the Chapel of Ease existed here. This may have been a connection with curious rumours of ghostly nuns being seen in Marton, at least one sighting being quite authentic, even though inexplicable. The church was destroyed, possibly by fire, in the 1860s and rebuilt in 1871, although some of its original ancient structure remains. The village boasts its own museum of county bygones, run by a local historian, George Timms, where many artefacts from days gone by, agriculture and domestic, can be seen, all beautifully displayed in a specially constructed building. Two local butterfly and moth enthusiasts were able, during the 1970s, to advise the Warwickshire Biological Records Centre of the first recorded Warwickshire sighting of the varied coronet. A Jewix plucea and a silver-striped hawk moth. The latter, the only Warwickshire sighting that century. There is also a colony of marbled white butterflies, not scarce but rarely seen because they live in very local colonies. Also in the area of natural history, there is still an ancient ridge and furrow field to be seen in the village. Many interesting and talented people have contributed to the life of the village over the years, and notable among them were Noel and Barbara Newsome, both talented artists who had exhibited at the Royal Academy. Noel had had a fascinating career, including service with the Ministry of Information during the war, and during his time here he worked tirelessly for the village, its church and for conservation. Barbara became the first woman church warden at Marton Church, and her talent as a sculptor was displayed whenever sufficient frozen snow enabled her to do exquisite snow sculptures round the village, which brought traffic chaos when people from miles around came to view them. She also produced large numbers of sun faces moulded in cement, and almost every garden in the village boasts one of these. New village signs bought to mark the millennium incorporate the Sunface logo in their design. Another famous inhabitant of Marton in the past was a racehorse foal named Santa Claus, bred by the local doctor Frank Smorfit, which went on to win the Derby in 1964. After feeding him with apples and crusts of bread, and watching him career round the paddock after his dam, the villagers cheered him to a man on that June day.
The next time, Elaine's off to Maxstoke. Last week, Margaret started the story of the women of Auschwitz who created an orchestra which probably saved their lives. She now completes that story, taken from Anne Sieber's new book.
The orchestral women were from many countries. Around half of them were Jewish. Most were not professional musicians. This orchestra was really a ragtag band of whatever people and instruments could be found. Laska was unusual as an expert, and even she had not played for about 2 years. The few professionals were the women who made the orchestral arrangements for them to play, Seba says. The others were mostly kids, 14 or 15 years old, who'd maybe had 2 years of learning to toot a recorder. If you go to Auschwitz and see the conditions that human beings were put through, the cold, the lack of food, the brutality, the mud, the appalling excess of inhumanity, you wonder why they would want to go on. Yet one thing I have learned is that the desire to live is extremely strong. Whatever sustained them, it was probably not the music. Most of the time they were scarcely playing real music, Seba says. The members had better conditions than their fellow inmates experienced. That would have added their survival. But so too did the fact that the orchestra could help them concentrate on something beyond the daily agonies of cold, hunger, disease, and the ever-present danger of death. The orchestra's linchpin was its conductor, Alma Rose, a professional violinist and director who had toured with her own all-female orchestra before the war. She was put in charge almost as soon as she arrived as a new prisoner. She happened to be the niece of the composer Gustav Mahler. She saved many lives by recruiting girls to play in the ensemble and fought for further privileges for them whenever opportunity arose. Such was her clout that at one point she was even granted the use of a grand piano. The first account of this orchestra was fraught with controversy. A memoir in 1976 by the French pianist, composer and singer Fania Fenelon, one of the orchestra members, caused fury among fellow survivors by depicting Rose as a cruel dictatorial conductor. It took a memoir by Lasker Wallfisch, Inherit the Truth, 1996, to set the record straight. In it, she recounted the horrors of her experiences at Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen. The fact was that Rose had to be strict. If they did not play well, they would have been sent to the gas chambers. Rose herself died in Auschwitz in April 1944 from seemingly accidental poisoning. Perhaps most valuable of all was their close bond that built up between the orchestra women. They supported one another in circumstances that put them in mortal danger. Lasker Wallfisch is one of only two survivors whom Seba was able to interview. At first she thought her the only one. She discovered another, Hilde Grunbaum, married name Simcha, by chance through contacts in Israel, and was able to talk to her before the violinist and orchestrator died in 2023. How will these vital histories be preserved once the last survivors are no longer with us? It is a daunting thought in a world where it's considered that an author must somehow own a story to have the right to tell it. But it is essential that new generations of researchers and writers should approach this territory, or the memories will be lost. What I feel with this book is that I'm happy to have done something that needed to be done, Seba says. If people think of Auschwitz, they think of thousands of people being disgorged from trains, then being shaved, and just as the Nazis wanted, they're reduced to a number and their humanity taken from them, and we don't know who they are. And here are between 40 and 50 women. I've given them their names and tried to construct a story around each of them. I wanted to convey who these women were. For me, everyone is a heroine. Above all, they survived. That's resistance. This book, both testimony and tribute, may stand as a memorial to them.
What a remarkable story. In every town and city we go to, there's evidence of homeless people living on the streets, and Sabrina Cohen-Hatton survived 2 years living just that way before finding secure accommodation. Bill reads the first part of this two-part story, written by Jane Warren.
With her ongoing career as a professor at Cardiff University, a PhD, and her immaculate personal grooming, Sabrina Cohen-Hatton, 41, is far from the traditional image of a firefighter. As Chief Fire Officer for West Sussex Fire and Rescue Service, the highest rank a firefighter in the UK can achieve, she's one of the UK's most senior female members of the service. She also advises Prince William on his campaign to end homelessness. For Sabrina, is an unusual senior member of the fire service for another quite remarkable reason. 2 years as a teenager, she was a homeless, rough sleeper on the streets of South Wales. She credits her survival during that turbulent period to her relationship with a remarkable stray dog she affectionately called Menace, who befriended her after the death of her father when she was 9. My mother struggled terribly with mental health issues, and after my father died, she really struggled to cope, she tells me. We lived in abject poverty for several years as a result, and by the time I was 15, we were in a really volatile situation. My mum loved me dearly, but she didn't have the capacity to be able to look after me properly. I was terrified of going into care, so I hid what was going on from school and started to sleep rough. Her experiences predate the Children Act 2004, which puts a duty on public bodies to share information about at-risk children. I left school the following year, aged 16, with no qualifications, continues Sabrina. I was completely emotionally isolated, and there was no one around to help me. I can't tell you the number of times people boot you in your sleeping bag or had their sleeping bag set on fire. Having Menace with me saved my life for sure. He really was an early warning system. She breaks into a smile about a small crossbreed who is black with a white chest. He was not the type that would have fought off an attacker, but he would poke his head out and start barking. Menace came running up to Sabrina one day when she was sitting on some steps. Tail wagging, he jumped up and licked my face, and I said, "Oh, you are a menace." He had this sweet little triangular ears, she recalls, and from that point on, the two were inseparable. Menace was instrumental in my recovery from homelessness, she says. Poverty is not something you can wash off your skin. It's internal. But having him meant I did have a connection at a time when I found it hard to trust people. Sabrina is talking to raise awareness of Street Vet, a charity of which she is an ambassador, during the Big Give. The charity was set up by Jade Statt, a vet who was speaking to a rough sleeper with a dog who noticed a canine skin condition that was easily treatable with the right cream, she explains. This was the charity's founding moment. She says Street Vet has an amazing network of vets who give their time, delivering free essential veterinary care to the pets of people experiencing homelessness. They also have a scheme to help identify places homeless people can go with their dogs, a game changer that helps to keep the benefit of the human-animal bond. When I was a young girl sleeping rough, people would exploit my vulnerabilities, but Menace kept me safe because he would alert me to what was going on by barking. He was instrumental in my recovery from homelessness. And having been on the other side, I appreciate how life-changing the work of Street Vet can be. Without veterinary care, issues that can be easily sorted out can quickly become a huge source of concern. The presence of her much-loved little dog did make it difficult for her to access other support services, but Sabrina insists, if it's a choice between a bed for a night or a dog, there is no choice. The dog wins every time. She was in the middle of her GCSEs when she made the decision to leave home. Sabrina would stash her school books in a box in a derelict building after studying on the street, fearful that asking for a school locker would alert social services and plunge her family deeper into crisis. However, her books were eventually torn apart by a neo-Nazi skinhead who saw her Jewish surname, Cohen, on the cover of a book and attacked her. He put out a cigarette on my arm. He really went to town on me. It was a horrible experience, recalls Sabrina, who once awoke to find someone urinating on her.
And Bill will conclude that story of Sabrina next week. I'm sure we're all fascinated by curious incidents. Dean Bevington wrote in This England magazine about such a happening in Suffolk, and this is read by Elaine.
If you were to wander around the old attractive village of Kersey in Suffolk, nothing would seem amiss. Medieval timber-framed houses are reminiscent of centuries gone by, while at the bottom of Church Hill, water flows over a quaint ford. Kersey is such a quintessentially English village that it's been used as a location in several TV dramas. But why, on a sunny Sunday morning in October 1957, did three teenage Royal Navy cadets flee the village in fear? They'd been tasked to find a waypoint and then report back after what should have been a pleasant orienteering journey, taking in Suffolk's countryside and villages. None of the boys could have suspected what was to happen to them, and would later become one of the county's enduring mysteries. While walking up the hill on the approach to Kersey, the trio heard church bells ringing and spotted smoke drifting out of chimneys. Everything seemed normal until they entered the village. Quiet blanketed the area, the sound of birdsong and bells having fallen away, and the eeriness increased with the absence of parked cars and people. Also, the church had disappeared, and one spare autumnal leaves reverted to leafy green. It was as though the village had been abandoned and frozen in time, like a museum, and the only creatures they saw were motionless ducks. According to the boys, the lanes had an earthen, dusty surface, and the houses were dirty. They peered through the grimy windows of one house, which apparently contained rotten ox carcasses hung up. The uncanny experience worsened with the feeling of being watched, so all three climbed a hill to leave the unsettling village behind. Then the waking nightmare ended. Kersey resumed normal life once they'd left. The church bells rang again and chimneys smoked. Did the cadets really experience a time slip in which they'd briefly entered a static past? Or maybe it was just an impish hoax? Intriguingly, later research discovered that the house with carcasses was once a butcher's shop. The Kersey village incident isn't the only case of its kind. Bold Street in Liverpool is the location of similar strange reports of people stepping into the past. Neither is the so-called Kersey time slip the county's only mystery. In the 12th century, two children with green skin appeared in the village of nearby Woolpit. One claimed they came from a dark world called St. Martin's Land, where everything was green. Curiouser and curiouser.
Curious things do happen. Now, Dave and Graham conclude their recent trip to Scotland, and they're still in Edinburgh and visiting Caldicotes.
Right, I am in the bar now of Caldicotes, and I'm speaking to a gentleman. What's your name?
Jackson, William Jackson.
Okay, how did the village get its name? It's quite an unusual name, isn't it?
Well, it was, but I don't originally come from here, but I've been here for a long time. It got its name because there's a river or a burn flows through it called the Calder, and Crooks means the middle.
Yeah.
So it's Calder Crooks.
Okay, that's
why it, that's why it got the name.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Well, good morning. We're back at Calder Crook Station. And where are we off to today, Graham?
Somerley Museum of Scottish Industrial Life.
That should be good. Should be interesting. For much of the 19th century and early 20th century, Scotland were world leaders in engineering, producing a vast array of machinery, tools and finished products. Well, we've been walking around the Heritage Park, and it's absolutely beautiful. Reminds me of the Black Country Museum, doesn't it? Walking in and out old houses.
Yeah.
And everything. So what have you seen so far that's taken your interest?
Yeah, the houses and the coal mining village. Yeah.
Yes, we're walking by a lovely river now. Okay, I'm speaking to a nice lady here. What's your name?
Natalie.
And whereabouts are you from?
Well, Kansas, but I live here in East Kilbride.
Well, it's an extremely nice place to live. So what do you think of the museum here and the great outdoor museum as well?
Well, it's actually kind of incredible that it's free to come in here, because this is, I was telling my partner that I'd come in here. I would have paid £5 just to get in. And yeah. Because it's so well maintained, it's so beautiful. And, I mean, especially these days when a lot of stuff, you walk out of the house and it's nickel and diming you to death. And it's just really nice to be able to come here. And there's families out, the weather's nice, the grounds are beautifully kept.
Well, it's a really interesting museum altogether, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. He's been loving the machinery.
Really?
Yeah.
Hello there.
Yeah, he loves his old farm machinery and whatnot.
Fascinating.
So, yeah, it's been a good day for both of us.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Take care.
Great. Yeah. Well, enjoy the rest of your stay here.
You
thank
too.
You very much. Okay. Well, we're now leaving the Somerley Scottish Industrial Museum. So what do you think of it, Graham?
Yeah, it's very good and it's free.
I know. And there's it's fascinating outdoors as well as indoors. It's absolutely beautiful and really interesting. And off we go. Where are we off to now, Graham?
The Horseshoe Bar.
Okay, right. We're going to listen to the Fletchers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay. And we're just going past the home of Albion Rovers Football Club on the way to the bar venue. We are in the bar. So how did you come to hear about the Fletchers in the first place? It's a long way to come.
I found them on Facebook Live in the pandemic.
Okay, I'm speaking to you from the Horseshoe Pub, and we've got an evening of entertainment. What's the atmosphere like in the Horseshoe?
It's very exciting. Joe and Laura Fletcher do our Wednesdays and our Sundays live entertainment, and it brings crowds from everywhere. They're a terrific couple. And it's a fun day, very fun day. Hopefully it'll be nice and busy and you'll see for yourself today.
Great. There was one scene, I think it was on Facebook, there was somebody dancing on the table.
That was
happen?
Myself.
Well,
yes, that was myself.
That's for you.
Yes, we do know how to enjoy ourselves here in Airdrie. And we encourage the customers to join in, because it's all fun. People come out for a fun day, and that's what we aim to give them.
That's what we're here for. Thank you. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Pauline.
Pauline.
Yes.
Great to meet you. We'll look forward to the evening. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you. So Pauline was actually dancing on the bar.
Yeah.
It's quite narrow.
People do dance on the bar here, yeah.
Fantastic, but I won't do that. No, I'll take your advice.
Definitely.
You ask me the questions, but I need to tell you lies. Oh, yes, I think you're just full of surprise.
I'm speaking of Laura of the Fletchers. Oh, and your other half is Joe.
Yes, correct. Well, he is indeed.
It's been a fantastic night. I've really enjoyed it. My birthday. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Laura.
Well, you're very welcome. It's lovely to see you. I'm glad you enjoyed your birthday.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what it's all about, having fun.
I know, there was a fantastic atmosphere tonight,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yep, great. Always is. Great people come to see us, so it's always a good night here. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to make our way back to the bed and breakfast place now for the last night. That was a fantastic night, wasn't it, Graham?
Really, yeah, it's a really good night. Yeah, great atmosphere, very friendly crowd here.
Really brilliant. Graham and I are about to say bye-bye to our hosts, Kay and Billy. We've been having a wonderful stay here. So thanks a lot for having us. It's been really nice.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome, Gil.
Yeah, David.
You're a nice man.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Your singing's a bit dodgy, but...
Pardon?
Your singing's a bit dodgy, but you're all right.
Thank you very much. Right, and on that note, cheers, by the new. Bye-bye. See you later.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Fantastic. Bye. Well, we're back in Partick now, and we're going for a walk. So what buildings are there over there?
The Hydro, which was used in the Commonwealth Games.
The cycling?
Yeah, cycling, yeah.
And there's a curious-shaped building there. That's known as the Armadillo.
Yeah.
Well, any idea what they do there?
Like a conference centre, I think.
Okay, right. We've arrived at Glasgow Airport for the flight home. Thank you for a fantastic holiday, Graham. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been great, yeah.
It has, okay. Okay, so it's bye from Bonnie Scotland. Cheerio!
Bye.
Dave and Graham certainly love their short breaks and will be off again next week. Now, you'll remember last week I set you a little conundrum about the three men who went to a restaurant where each paid £10 but were refunded £1 each, while the dishonest waiter pocketed £2. So 3 times £9 is £27 and the waiter's £2 is £29. So what's happened to the £1? Well, a little earlier I recorded this explanation. Now, last week I gave you the conundrum about the three men going to the restaurant, paying £10 each, then getting a pound refund, so £9 each, and the waiter pocketed £2. Well, the easy way to work out what the problem is here is actually say, hang on, originally they paid £30, eventually they paid £27, so the £30 has got nothing to do with it any longer. So £27 less the £2 that the waiter kept, it's back to the £25 it should have been. If you want to do it, the easy way to look at it physically is probably get some matchsticks and put 3 lots of 10 down, take one away from each, you've got 9, and then you realise that there are £27 only been paid and the £2 has been whittled away by the waiter. Hope you got that right. Okay, bye. And with that answer for you to mull over, we come to the end of this week's Outlook. So from me, Nigel Hewin, and all the Outlook team, it's goodbye till next week.